Dr. Paul, welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. I get to interview Mickey Willis, the author of the new book, Plandemic, the producer of the movie Plandemic, and the sequels. He predicted exactly what was happening with this pandemic before it happened. What? How could he do that? You're going to find out. I also interview Dr. Henry Ely. He's talking with me about breakthrough cases, these cases that supposedly aren't happening, but folks, stay tuned. They are, in a big way, and he explains why there's this disconnect between what we're hearing from Britain and other parts of the world where the vaccinated are filling the hospitals, not the unvaccinated, and why it's different here in the United States. He's also going to share about the Biden mandates for vaccines being legally challenged, and OSHA can no longer go into your business and give you fines. They won that case. And then finally, you're going to hear from Sally Kirkland. She's been in over 200 movies. She's an actress. She's an activist. And she shares her story of COVID vaccine injury. Now, I don't know if you knew this, but as a member, go to doctorsinscience.com, and as a member of our show, you get to talk to me, ask me anything you want every week live. I'm right there for you. Join the team. Thanks for watching. I'm Dr. Paul. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. Today, I'm going to ask you to join me in releasing fear and living in love with faith. But I've got an update for you. I'm going to give you an update on what's going on with me and the board and a little travel update. Let's start with the board. Many of you know that in 2016, I wrote the vaccine-friendly plan. That resulted in a series the last 3 years of multiple board actions against me. So far, they're all just open cases. There's been no finding in any of this. When I published the incredible article from the data of my practice that was at the board's request, they said, show us that the CDC schedule, that your vaccine-friendly plan schedule is as safe as the CDC schedule. We got the data, blinded it, published it in peer-reviewed journal, and 5 days after that was available online, you've heard the story, I got the notice that my license had been suspended, emergently suspended because I was a threat to public health. Okay, let's fast forward. We've had a trial where they were trying to impose about $100,000 fine for the fact that I wasn't giving personal data of my patients. Over 1,000 patients, they wanted the personal data, which was against IRB rulings. We went to court. That's another whole story. But most recently, this past week, I get a call from my attorney, and he says, the board is offering you a one-time deal. And I'm like, oh, a deal. And the deal is this. If I agree not to ever see patients under the age of 18 again, not to do any research, and it was interesting, they specifically stated prospective research, and agreed to a civil fine that they would release me from if I was basically a good boy for the next 3 years, they would lift all the sanctions and the charges that are up against me. Well, I find that interesting because when we were in court a little over a month ago, that gave us the opportunity to ask for discovery. And so the board, the state of Oregon, needs to show us everything that we've asked for, which includes all their communications, and we're still waiting. So that's the update, folks. What my attorney was saying is that this is going to be a battle of all battles because the boards are not accountable to follow the directions of the judge. So we have a trial that's currently set up for January, and that's a 2-week trial. At the end of that, even if the judge was to rule completely in our favor, the board will likely levy some charges and can charge me with all of their fees, their fines, and of course my own attorney fees. So the only thing that was standing between me and going on this fight was the money. We're going to raise it, folks. You'll hear more about that in the near future. But I just wanted to let you know, I am here standing for your freedom, your right to make decisions based on your personal convictions and based on the information and the process of informed consent. Get the facts, get the pros and the cons, the alternatives, and then you get to decide. That's what it's all about, folks. Travel update. I have been traveling around the country speaking, mostly presenting the data from my own study, the vaxxed unvaxxed data. We presented this data in an earlier show. You can find that in the members section, so be sure you're a member so you can get access to all my previous information, slide presentations when I travel around the country. It's just interesting to note that around the country where I travel, nobody's wearing masks, everybody is healthy, even if they're unvaxxed. It's just curious. It doesn't quite add up. I mean, airplanes are full. Of course, we wear our masks on the airplanes. It's the FDA rulings. But people are doing real well. If you are healthy, if you have adequate vitamin D levels, if you're eating good food, getting your rest, your nutrition, you'll be fine. Don't listen to the fear-mongering that's in the news. So that's the update. Lose the fear. Just refuse to participate in that whole fake makeup world of fear, and live in love, live in faith, and have a blessed week. I'm Dr. Paul. Welcome to Against the Wind. I am on site at the Truth About Cancer Live 2021, and who do I run into? But this guy here, Mickey Willis, he's now an author of Plandemic. He produced the movie Plandemic, and I've been wanting to meet you because I just like that. That movie is controversial, but it just blows things out of the water. What do you think are the key points that come out of that movie that people who haven't seen it need to know?
Well, you know, everything that we claimed in Plandemic when we released it was at the very beginning of the pandemic. And so everything at that point was new, and that's why it became so controversial.
Right.
But now everything's been validated. So, you know, that it was lab manufactured through gain-of-function research, funded through the NIH, through Anthony Fauci, through EcoHealth Alliance. We drew all that out and followed the paper trail before, you know, before it was globally known.
Yeah.
But in Plandemic 2, Plandemic 1 is the one that was seen over a billion times. Plandemic 2 has been seen a couple of hundred million of times. But that's the one that we fully pulled back the curtain on the fact checkers, on Google, on Wikipedia, on the WHO, the CDC, Bill Gates, all of it. So that's really the bombshell.
When I realized the extent of the deception,
yeah,
right? I mean, the PCR testing with the levels of cycles they set it at,
yeah,
it just made almost all of those false positives.
Yeah.
And then that's all the news would talk about.
Exactly. The case dimmicks.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, okay, what are they up to here? And then we get the vaccine.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. It's dangerous. With all the deaths, and I mean, you didn't know that at the time, but
no.
We now know, and yet,
yeah,
there's no response.
We knew it was coming, and I was actually just studying a new report right now about all-cause death mortality rate,
yeah,
death rate. And I had a lot of doctors say, well, let's wait for the all-cause mm-hmm. mortality rate to come out, and we'll see what's really going on here. And that's coming out now, and so people are... Now they're going, you know, what's going on here? We have the record number of, you know, cardiac arrest, and what's going on? And so just now people are starting to put together that it's as a result of vaccinating with these particular experimental vaccines and at the time that we did it during a pandemic, which is a lot of doctors spoke out and said, this is very,
not
very deadly.
Idea.
We're training the virus to be more intelligent, which we're going to pay the price for that.
So you predicted what's happened. What's going to happen next?
Yeah, good question. What's going to happen next? It's pretty easy to tell. It's even beyond prediction because it's really about just reading, mm-hmm. you know. And what's going to happen next is we're going to have COVID is fading away, and mm-hmm. we'll have other viruses and variants, and that will last mm-hmm. forever. But it's going to become an environmental thing now, and so you're going to hear the word carbon lockdowns.
Okay.
So COVID has been a preparation for us to get used to. Them telling us to stay in our homes and when to drive and who to stand by and all of that. And so we'll have carbon lockdowns. And then we'll also, one of the things that we have to prepare for right now is we will have energy situations. We will have cyber attacks. We will have food shortages. Our food supply is already being attacked right now. So that's already underway. But these are all the things that they've done simulations for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that we spotlighted in indoctrination, which is Plandemic Part 2, is that they'll always do simulations of what's to come.
Hmm.
And so Event 201, and we featured three other simulations that had been done, and so they just completed one at the end of 2020 regarding what's coming, and that's everything that I just mentioned. So that's what's coming next.
So these are extremely powerful interests.
Yeah.
and what's their end game?
How do they win? Another fantastic question. A lot of people will say, well, the end game is control, total control. Very close. But why? Why do they want total control? Some people will say communism. Well, the model of communism, it creates the environment for total control. Okay, but for what reason? Well, they just want to control the people so that they can keep people enslaved. Sure. But what's really going on?
Right.
It comes down to these elite forces that have been literally running our world forever. Not just elite forces from America, but from Great Britain and from all over the place. You might call them the globalists. These are the people who want the one world government.
Right. No borders.
And they don't want the one world government just to be more efficient in governing our world. They want it because of situations like this. When you have a pandemic and there are some nations and some states that don't play the game, they become the outliers that we can point towards and say, well, why is Sweden's numbers or Japan's numbers or, you know, the places that didn't play the game or that respected their citizens by saying it's voluntary, why they didn't kill their economy? They had much better infection rates and death rates. Like, what's going on there? They can't have that. So everybody has to be
that
under their
messes
their
up
domain.
Their narrative.
It does. And so, but to answer your question, we have to realize what are the biggest industries, the biggest and darkest industries on the planet. And that has to do with trafficking. That's drug trafficking and that's human trafficking. And a lot of revelations were taking place where some of the kingpins were being taken down. So there's people that were considered to be untouchable, the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, the Jeffrey Epsteins of the world. These are all people that are part of this racket. And it's much more prevalent than anyone wants to believe that it is. It's really serious, and there's politicians involved, and there's major celebrities involved. And it's a game they've been playing forever. The lure of sex, of dark sex, and money, and drugs, and all of that. A lot of this is to create an environment of total control because it was starting to unravel. And the only way that they can stop the information is to create an emergency situation that will have people surrender their liberties, that will seem that there's a justified clamping down of censorship. And all of this is to protect where they saw the trajectory going, which was their game being revealed, fully revealed.
Yeah.
And so it has a lot to do, and the human trafficking part of it is a huge part of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that happens, but I hadn't realized it was deep and huge. Because you would think people with money can go buy sex anytime they want.
Well, they can, and they have been, and that's the problem, is because they kind of have a protected environment where, you know, if you just study the Jeffrey Epstein thing, he bought an island on purpose so he had a submarine, he had helicopters, he'd bring people there in private. And see, a lot of our corruption game is having dirt on people. So there's a lot of politicians that don't even want to be where they are right now, but they were told, you're going to run for governor, you're going to do this because we have dirt on you, and if you don't, here's what happens. And then when you get in that place, we'll get you elected. Once you get in, this is what you do.
Wow. So what do the little guys, like our viewers and little old me, what do?
We do what we're doing right now. We're doing what you're doing right now. You know, me as a filmmaker, you know, more artists, more storytellers need to step forward.
Yeah.
It's a big risk we take, as you know, better than anyone.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big risk you take. You know the moment you speak out of what's going to happen. I knew the moment on May the 4th, 2020, we literally said, May the 4th be with us. Before I hit that button, it was a serious consideration of like, I'm about to sever every bridge I've ever built in 30 years in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it is exactly what happened. You know, Netflix pulled my name off movies, Amazon, everything. It just went, we can't have anything to do with you now.
Wow.
And my life has only gotten better.
Yep.
And to be able to do what we're doing, you as a doctor, to honor your oath, me as a filmmaker, to honor that dream I had as a child, to tell stories that made a difference, all that's done is pushed us into our life's purpose.
Yeah. Thank you, brother.
Yeah.
And you have a life purpose too. Join us. Welcome, Dr. Henry Ely, back to Against the Wind. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Paul. It's so much fun being with you, and I really love your audience and the support that we get from them.
Well, you know, thank you for the message you're bringing to the world. You're the executive director of the Energetic Health Institute, but more than that, you bring heart and love to everything you do. And I'm mostly so grateful for the clarity that you have on the COVID-19 information. I thought we might start our conversation by my asking you this. Here's the challenge I'm having. When I listen to the news, when I look at mainstream reports, news reports, if you will, they're saying this is a epidemic of the unvaccinated. That's mm-hmm. sort of the message we're getting in the United States. And yet, when I look at reports from overseas, England, Israel, other places, and actually when you really dive into the data, which I know you're the expert at that, it feels to me like it's the opposite. I think this whole issue of reporting on vaccine breakthrough cases, if you might walk us through that a little bit, because that messaging that it's an epidemic of the unvaccinated would mm-hmm. mean that you're denying that the vaccinated are having any problems.
Correct. So would you like me to share a screen with that?
Yes, that would be awesome. Go for it.
Okay. So I'm going to share some data. We did something really interesting for the last, in August, Dr. Paul, I started looking at breakthrough. You know, we've been tracking breakthrough on the CDC's one page they had for, you know, since March, right? But something interesting happened when I went to go look at that page for a patient on October 30th, it was no longer there. Instead, it forwards to a new page on vaccine effectiveness, supposed effectiveness, which recreates that argument, this really unfounded, unproven argument that this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, right? So the data on breakthrough is gone, but we're going to tell you that these vaccines work, these so-called vaccine work. And we're going to also tell you that the problem isn't you who've been inoculated. It's the unvaccinated, those unclean, dirty, scary, scary people, right? So what I said was, look, I wanted to really delve into vaccine breakthrough cases, hospitalizations, and deaths for a long time, because what we did last year when we were looking at the case data and the hospitalization and death data for infections was we looked at what the CDC said, and then we went to every single state health department and said, is there a match, right? When we total up every single state health department. So this weekend, I finally got around to it. And I said, let's go and look at every single health department from Alabama all the way down to the Great Plains in Wyoming, and who's actually reporting on vaccine breakthrough and who's not, because it's very insightful. So overview is that when we total up reported vaccine breakthrough cases from every single state health department, there are over 1.4 million confirmed reports of vaccine breakthrough. That's mind-blowing. 1.4 million times this supposed miracle inoculation has failed to protect people from getting the infection.
About hospitalizations and deaths, did you look at that?
We did. Over 56,000 breakthrough hospitalizations and over 16,000, sadly, breakthrough deaths.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, we hear this message. The hospitals are full of those unvaccinated patients. Where are these 56,000 breakthrough hospitalizations? Are they not being acknowledged? What's going on?
Well, they are being acknowledged by only 31 out of 51 U.S. health departments. Of course, we include Washington, D.C. in this look as well. So this data that we have right here, Dr. Paul, is with 20 health departments not reporting anything. 20. Huh. Okay, not anything substantial. So let me give a little bit of a breakdown through here. So California is actually doing a decent job with their reporting in it. And so is Texas doing a pretty decent job when we get all the way down here. So the major states, you know, you want to check on and say, but what's very interesting when you look at this is we have a number of states who aren't reporting anything. And then we have some states like Colorado who aren't reporting actual numbers. They're doing what the CDC has started doing, what they're publishing or what they're calling a new statistical category called breakthrough rates. So when you go to the CDC, they have break, they will give you breakthrough rates. How many, what's the rate of hospitalizations in the unvaccinated versus the vaccinated? What's the rate of hospitalizations in, or excuse me, the rate of death in vaccinated versus unvaccinated, right? So they're giving you this, this kind of data. The problem with rates is that you have to go to the back end tables where the data is and to be able to see, well, what are you basing these rates on? Where did you come up with this number?
What's the denominator?
What's the denominator, right? And the CDC isn't providing that. Colorado isn't providing that. So essentially what they're doing is they're writing a number down that looks good. And there's no way for an independent investigator to evaluate or challenge that number. I can't get that data. So, wow. So there's no way for me to prove it. So what we can do though, Dr. Paul, is we can go up and say, well, what did the CDC say on there? So the CDC stopped reporting on October 30th, right? On or around October 30th. So just 2 weeks later, when we look at every single state health department, there's 56,324 hospitalizations versus the 30,000 that the CDC was reporting just 2 weeks prior. There weren't 26,000, you know, hospitalizations over those 2 weeks in the vaccine breakthrough category. So what that takes us to is a confirmation that the CDC is underreporting what the states that the few states that are reporting is there. So the CDC data they've been telling us all along has been wrong. You know, there wasn't 6,000 deaths in 2 weeks, you know, in the breakthrough category. So, you know, what this tells us is once again, the CDC has been lying. They've been lying using stats and data, and the inaccuracies are very incredibly misleading. The lies are misleading to the American people to, so that they can fit a narrative that the, what they like to say, these hospitalizations, breakthrough cases, hospitalizations and deaths are rare. 1.4 million breakthrough cases does not sound rare to me.
That is not rare.
Regular, right?
No, 56,000 hospitalizations, 16,000 deaths. That is not rare, folks. So to put it in a simple sentence, because you can dazzle us with these numbers and your amazing work here. Thank you for doing it, by the way. What's your message about what's actually going on here on the ground in the United States?
Well, the message is very simple. This isn't a pandemic, number one. And it's certainly, but it's not a pandemic of the unvaccinated. It's a pandemic of the unhealthy. And I can prove that using CDC data if you'd like. Would you like to see that as well?
Actually, go for it.
All right.
That is so important, both whether they have underlying risk factors, right? The unhealthy, but also just looking at ages. I mean,
exactly. You nailed it. I mean, that those are the two things that we have to look at. So I've put together a slideshow that we've submitted for elected officials and attorneys who are on the fight on this. And we've answered very important questions. How many studies prove immunity post-infection is better than immunity post-experimental inoculation? So there's over 106 studies now that confirm, peer-reviewed studies that show if you've recovered from this, that you are far and away better off than somebody who's received the inoculation. It's not even a question anymore. But when we get into this being, you know, let me get down to the question. Is this a pandemic of the unvaccinated or the unhealthy, right? When we get to that, the CDC shows very clearly that in terms of hospitalizations, that the people being hospitalized have severe underlying medical conditions. And this is, again, on the CDC's site. They show that over 60% of hospitalizations had some major disease like cancer. Over half of all hospitalizations were obese, not overweight, obese. And that over 40% had metabolic disease, over 50%, again, hypertensive, high blood pressure, and over 35, approaching 40% had some form of cardiovascular disease. These are major comorbidities. And this is what's been driving this. And we've known this since March of 2020, that these were the people that are going to be driving this so-called pandemic. When you look at age range and age stratification, you see the same thing, hospitalizations associated by age. You see the predominant amount of hospitalizations are in people who are over 50 years of age. You can see the 65 plus is this orange kind of reddish line right here all the way through week by week. And then this dark blue right here is 50 to 64. It's people over 50 years of age who are already in really unhealthy states of existence that are driving this. It's not the unvaccinated, it's the healthy that are driving the older. This.
So that slide would show the ages. If we just pause one moment.
Yeah, for there. Sure. Please, please.
Let's look at that 0 to 17-year-olds. This is my practice. I'm a pediatrician.
Right.
I haven't had a single hospitalization from my 10,000 patients throughout the entire pandemic, except now some of my teenagers are going to the pharmacy and getting the COVID shot. I've now had a myocarditis hospitalization. Mm-hmm. And they're now rolling out this vaccine to a population that absolutely doesn't need it. What do you say to that?
Well, what I say to that is it's unethical, unconscionable, and unscientific. When we look at the data from the CDC, and we just updated it as of November 7th, we see that in under 17, and I should say under 18 years of age, the recovery rate, according to the CDC, when you put both of these groups together, is 99.99%. So there's no rationale, there's no gain of benefit for going and getting an experimental inoculation, especially with the laundry list of warnings that come along with it, that you could die, that myocarditis is a very common thing. I mean, you can go to the story of Ernest Ramirez, his son, Ernesto Ramirez Jr., who just, he gave testimony, thanks to Senator Ron Johnson, I think last week on Capitol Hill. That testimony has already been banned on all social media for some reason. And when we look at his story, his son died of myocarditis after not receiving informed consent. He made a very good statement, and I love Ernest Ramirez. He's one of the great dads out there and great Americans out there. To go through what he's gone through, losing his son he said point blank, the government and the pharmaceutical companies murdered my son. And to have the strength and courage to go out there and talk about it while he's clearly in a grieving process is just, my heart goes out to him, and I'm so honored to fight alongside him, you know, and do what's right. It's unconscionable what's going on, especially when you have this kind of data. Yeah. Americans should know that the recovery rates are so egregiously high. I mean, I shouldn't say egregiously, so hope-filled and high that there's no reason to be afraid. There's if you're under 65 years of age, there is no reason to be afraid. Look at that.
I mean, unless you had multiple massive comorbidities, right? If you were obese with heart disease and that sort of thing.
I still wouldn't be afraid, Dr. Paul, and here's why. Because we know that when we get vitamin D levels to at least 50 nanograms per milliliter, even in those high-risk people, the likelihood of recovery is in the 99.9 percentile. And we also know that the necessity of hospital intervention in that same demographic, people over 50 nanograms per milliliter of just vitamin D alone the need for hospitalization is under 3%. This is a study that came out with hundreds of thousands of people in the study.
I absolutely agree with you.
So what I say to your audience on this is don't drink the Kool-Aid that this is the unclean, the heathen, unvaccinated among us. Oh, be afraid of them. We're not a threat. We're actually probably good for you because, you know, we're number one, honoring the Constitution and our rights. But number two, most of us have established immunity. Like I have established immunity. I've recovered from a COVID infection, and it was... Yeah. You know, it's a different infection, but it's nothing to be afraid of when you're prepared for it.
No, I absolutely agree. I've been traveling around the country for the last few months. I've been in rooms with, you know, hundreds and sometimes a couple thousand people elbow to elbow, most unvaccinated, not a problem in the group, not a problem for myself. Natural immunity and vitamin D is key for that, folks, as you just heard. It's robust and it's fine. This is not something to be afraid of. However, I want you to pivot now to, you've been involved, I think, with a court victory that happened. You know, we've got this mandates, right, that are coming from the administration, right, from the White House, basically. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that. What's going on?
Well, last week, people may have heard that the Biden administration was rebuked by the Fifth Circuit Court. And specifically Judge Engelhardt, Judge Duncan, and Judge Jones, who demanded immediate information to substantiate why they were trying to work around the Constitution and really empower OSHA to do something that it's not federally legally able to do, and that is issue ungodly amounts of mandates, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of mandates to upon businesses, and become this new Gestapo, you know, this new secret police, you know, for businesses. That's what's gotten so many businesses freaked out, that, oh my God, OSHA is going to show up to my door with hundreds of thousands of dollars of fines if I don't make sure all my employees are inoculated or tested every week, right? That's why all these companies have set this ridiculous, like, November, December deadline and everything, right? Well, Judge Engelhardt agrees with us, you know, and I wrote an article on this for the America Out Loud platform, just showing that, you know, we needed a good judge and we got one. You know, we got three of them, who he gave one of the most well-argued opinions I've ever read. It was a 22-page opinion that he gave on this, on upholding a stay. So there was a group of states and business owners got together and filed a request for a stay of the mandates. And so the judge said, hey, well, we need some more information from the Biden administration. The Biden administration and OSHA delivered that information. And what the judge said in there, let me read one of the quotes, because there's some epic quotes in this. If you want to, we've read so much crap, right? I don't know about you. I've read so many things that hurt my heart and hurt my eyes. This is something I encourage everybody to read, because it'll make you feel good. I'm going to give you just a couple quotes here. This is from the Honorable Kurt D. Engelhardt, and this is for case 21-60845. This is on page 20. Quote, the public interest is also served by maintaining our constitutional structure and maintaining the liberty of individuals to make intensely personal decisions according to their own convictions, even, or perhaps particularly, when those decisions frustrate government officials. This is his basic throwdown. It's a scathing, it's an absolutely scathing 22 pages. And it was very, very, very welcome to read. Let me read one more quote for you, Dr. Paul. This one got me going. It was, he said, the mandate is staggeringly overbroad, applying to 2 out of 3 private sector employees in America in workplaces as diverse as the country itself. The mandate fails to consider what is perhaps the most salient fact of all. The ongoing threat of COVID-19 is more dangerous to some employees than other employees. All else equal, a 28-year-old trucker spending the bulk of his workday in the solitude of his cab is simply less vulnerable to COVID-19 than a 62-year-old prison janitor. Likewise, a naturally immune unvaccinated worker is presumably at less risk than an unvaccinated worker who has never had the virus. The list goes on, but one constant remains. The mandate fails almost completely to address or even respond to much of this reality and basic common sense.
We have lost common sense. Answer this for me, if you will. Does this mandate now free employers not to have to institute mandates in their workplace?
Yes, it does, for the time being. The OSHA has officially stood down as of, I think, today or yesterday, and saying they are going to honor the Fifth Circuit Court's ruling, Judge Engelhardt, Duncan, and Jones. And therefore, any business that's watching can say, well, now there is no mandate. As of today, there is officially no mandate, and we do not have to continue to go along with this because of a fear of a fine. Now, it has been appealed by the Biden administration, which I think is a tremendous mistake on their part. They are appealing this, and the appeal will be heard by the Sixth Circuit Court in Ohio. And that appeal is going to have to figure out a way to overturn this 22-page opinion. And judges are very reticent to overturn this. One of the things that Judge Engelhardt did in his opinion, it's not simply an opinion. He actually cited Supreme Court cases and federal law consistently throughout his opinion to justify his stance. And that's going to make it very difficult for any court to overturn that, because they would be doing so against existing Supreme Court rulings and federal law.
Fantastic. That is great news. Just in wrapping it up, I want to go back to misinformation and this whole notion that, oh, whether it's the Dirty Dozen or you or I, you know, just sharing peer-reviewed journals or CDC data, we can be charged of spreading misinformation. You and I live in Oregon, and I just recently got this week this Oregon Health Authority document that they emailed to all their people addressing misconceptions about COVID-19 vaccines. And there's four things they list. And I'm just going to read them real quick and then let you take a stab at these if you don't mind. So the risk of myocarditis is greater from COVID-19 than from being vaccinated. Actually, let's do them one at a time. What do you say to that?
I say prove it. I read that same thing. There wasn't one citation in any of these claims. Not one citation, not one backlink to any study to substantiate it. It's just pure hearsay. And yeah. And really a prime example of what misinformation actually looks like, because right. It's not factually true.
Yeah. I mean, my experience, boots on the ground, like I already mentioned earlier, 10,000 patients for almost 2 years. Most of these kids have had COVID, or at least half of them for sure. Mm-hmm. Not a single case of myocarditis until some of my teenagers started going on their own and getting the vaccine. So experience in my own real world practice is the exact opposite. Well, it is the vaccine that's causing myocarditis.
Forgive me for interrupting. Can I give some data on that just so everybody knows?
Yeah,
everybody
absolutely.
Okay. So the CDC reports that, and myocarditis would fall under the category of MISC, all right, which is the multi-inflammatory system, you know, for in children, right? This would fall under this definition. Out of over 5.6 million cases confirmed SARS-CoV-2, according to the CDC, there have been exactly 5,526 cases of inflammation, MISC, and not all of those will result in myocarditis. So what that means for us statistically is when we take 5526 and divide it by 5.7 million roughly, multiply that by 100. That means that the likelihood of myocarditis post-infection is 0.09%. Okay. So it is to say it is not a thing in infection. But it has been such a thing in the clinical studies, and we have so much evidence to support it. I mean, we're seeing new jumps in heart attacks. Let me give you this data right now from Veris. We're seeing new stuff in terms of heart attacks, in this age range. So heart attacks in the 12 to 29 age range, because they don't track it below 12 as yet, is we have 305 reports. But we've seen that number going up dramatically over the last couple of weeks. So when we start looking at this, Dr. Paul, when a doctor from the Oregon Health Authority says something like this, they have the duty and obligation to the people to substantiate what they are saying with at least citations of empirical evidence and give us a chance to review the data that you're drawing this from. Right. This is hearsay, and it's garbage, and it's really something that should cause him to lose his license to be as misleading as he's being.
Yeah. So the next thing he says, vaccine side effects are mostly mild when compared to the effects of COVID-19. Well, not in children. There's been no serious illness in any of the children in my practice, period. Mm-hmm. 10,000 kids for 2 years. Until you start vaccinating. So this is exactly opposite to the real truth.
It totally is. And this is where we look again at hospitalization rates, in the under 18. Hospitalization rates are making up in this age range under 18 for the infection are making up just under 1% of all hospitalizations.
Yeah.
It's not significant.
And then this next one really infuriates me because it's actually dangerous to spread this misinformation. And that is getting vaccinated after having COVID-19 is beneficial.
Right.
Oh my Lord, it is actually harmful.
Right. We have clear studies that show when you have an established immunological response to the SARS-CoV-2 virus that post and then get inoculated, that it actually deranges the immunological response to other infections. It actually takes it down by modifying T cells and focusing the immune system too intently on something that the body has already overcome. You cannot become more immune to something that you are already immune to. And right. that's a failure to understand basic tenets of, and basic known tenets of immunology. It's just a failed thought. It's a totally profit-based thought process, and it's not steeped in science or ethics.
Yep. And then finally, COVID-19 vaccines are unable to change DNA and do not cause infertility.
You know, if that's that, first of all, that first statement on not able to change DNA is, again, hearsay. There are studies underway, post-marketing surveillance, or I shouldn't say post-marketing surveillance because they're still in phase 3 clinical trial. That is still being assessed and cannot be definitively concluded until the clinical trials conclude in 22, 23, or if you're Cormier or not, the supposedly fully FDA-approved vaccine, not until 2027 does that one done. And then what's very concerning is when we look at the whistleblower information that's been coming out, more information just dropped from the FDA today, actually, that definitively shows that Pfizer has defrauded the United States government and the American people in their phase 3 clinical trials. The data that they have submitted is very, in terms of number of deaths that just came out today, there were actually more deaths in the experimental group than the placebo group. But the claim at the time of submission for the EUA was just the opposite. The claim was that there were more deaths in the placebo group than the experimental group. That is a bold-faced lie. It is a major, major criminal act that they have committed. And we have to keep in mind, leopards don't change their spots. Pfizer is on record, if when you go to the Department of Justice, of having to pay the largest fine for fraud in U.S. history. I think it was $3.2 billion fine that they paid. And I think that's what they're expecting to pay here, to be quite honest with you, Dr. Paul. I think they're expecting to pay $5 to $10 billion in fines for their lies, but have no criminal misconduct be perpetuated or taken actions taken against them, and that they get the net sum of all the other hundreds of millions of dollars that they've made in defrauding the American people and really the world.
Yeah, perhaps willful misconduct will be proven, in which case their immunity from lawsuits goes away.
That's what that's the angle we've taken over the last year, is that the breach to all of these supposed protections for wrongdoing is willful misconduct, and we believe we can prove it.
I think so. Well, on that hopeful note, give us your parting words of wisdom for our listeners today.
I think it's the same message. You know, we want to stay on the same message. The strength you have is in being informed on all of these topics. And being informed means asking very good questions, right? So in the case of the Oregon Health Authority, make the doctor who's making these statements prove it. We're happy to prove what we're saying. Make them prove it as well. Make them earn your trust. And until such time as they've earned your trust, make sure you are taking care of yourself especially during these winter months, supplementing with vitamin D3, vitamin A, zinc, vitamin C, of course. And then go that extra mile if you can afford it, and put glutathione and bifidobacterium and quercetin in your body. But really, this is not a disease of the unvaccinated. This is a pandemic, if it is a pandemic, of the unhealthy. And that's something that we can all do something about.
The power is in your hands, folks. Thank you so much, Dr. Ely, once again, for enlightening us today. Have a blessed week.
Thank you, brother.
Welcome to Against the Wind, Sally Kirkland. What a pleasure to have you on. You are a movie, television, and theater veteran with over 200 movies since the 60s, best known for the drama movie Anna in 1987, which you were the best actress, your Oscar nomination, and won the Best Actress Golden Globe, the Independent Spirit Award, the LA TV Film Critics Circle Award. You are just so prolific in your career. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure for me to talk about this subject, which is very important for me.
Thank you for doing that. So the subject is vaccine injury or vaccine side effects with regards to the COVID-19 vaccines. I understand you got the Moderna vaccine.
I did.
Yeah. Tell us about that, like how your health was before and then after.
Okay. My health was fine. And the first Moderna shot was fine. The second one, however, which was March 2nd, so they came around to the right window. I put my arm out and they gave me the shot. And Paul, I would say within minutes, I got the worst headache I ever got in my life. I'm somebody who has had migraines, and so I know bad headaches. This was worse than any migraine I ever had. I tried to just rest and sleep. But that night at 11:45, I came out of the room and the whole living room, I felt like I was falling out of a plane. Mm-hmm. Everything was just, it was so scary. I was screaming and I was dizzy and I fell to the ground, broke my toe, sprained my ankle. And because I have a titanium knee, couldn't get off of the ground.
Wow.
Luckily, on my butt, I got from the living room to the kitchen where my phone was charging, and I called the building manager in the middle of the night, and she came over and got me up off the floor and to bed. And the next morning, she got me to urgent care. And, you know, they said, yes, you're suffering from dizziness and whatnot, but they knew nothing about vaccine side effects, nothing. Mm-hmm. I told them that I just had this shot and it was totally blank canvas. And so I was confused, didn't know what to do, called my own MD and he gave me something called Meclizine for dizziness and vertigo. And that day, March 3rd, I guess, until now, November 8th, is it?
November 9th today.
I have had injury side effects that look like right now what I've been dealing with for 6-7 months is it feels like there's a knife in my stomach, sharp pain in my stomach all the time.
And you had never had that symptom before?
No. Extreme headaches, dizziness, joint, all my joints were in pain.
Still?
What's that?
Is your joint pain still ongoing?
Yes, I'm going to Cedars-Sinai next week to have treatment on my sacroiliac, and then the week after lumbar, week after cervical.
And those were all new since the shot?
Well, I'm 80 years old, so I have, you know, some aches and pains, but nothing like what I have been experiencing the past 6 or 7 months.
Yeah. How's your energy before and after the shot?
That's a good question. I'm much more fatigued. I don't know what to say. I just all the time want to sleep.
Yeah, I hear that story a lot.
Yeah.
Did you have any other neurological symptoms?
Well, I was doing a movie in Atlanta, Georgia, called The Walk. And this was like midway between March and now. And I didn't feel well, so I lay down. And then the next thing you know, I thought, well, I'll go downstairs to the hotel restaurant and get some breakfast. And next thing I know, the elevator door opens and the costumer of the movie is there. And I'm slumped on the ground crying, yelling, help, help. And she says, Sally, here, let's get you back to your room. She got me back up to my room. And within minutes, there were paramedics in the room and they were rushing me to a hospital. And his name was Dr. Faulkner at ER And he said, I feel so bad for you. We've been having people come in after the second shot like this. And he said, I don't know what I can do for you. Maybe they hydrated me. Maybe they did all the things you would do, blood tests, hydration, whatnot. But basically, that was the first of many experiences like that. Not the first, but that kind of shocking, like out of nowhere, I'm in a hospital.
Right. And that's all new since the shot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Three other ER experiences at Cedars-Sinai since the shot. And finally, the dizziness sort of, I can't even say that, Paul, because yesterday I had vertigo and the day before I had vertigo. And my balance isn't quite perfect.
Yeah.
But the hardest thing to deal with is this feeling of a knife in my stomach. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether anyone's told you that before.
No, that's the first I've heard. Although, mind you, I'm a pediatrician, so I don't deal with as many vaccine injuries because they've only just this week approved the shot for the 5 to 11 year olds.
You've approved them?
No, I haven't. FDA and the committee at the CDC that makes vaccine recommendations this past week approved it for 5 to 11 year olds, which is just tragic.
Yeah. Tragic.
Yeah, I have 10,000 patients in my practice. Not a one has ended up in the ER or hospitalized the entire duration of this pandemic from the disease of COVID-19. I mean, kids do fine.
Good.
Yeah.
It's very sad about the children. I don't know what to say. I speak out a lot about this, and I get emails from around the world, people thanking me from stopping them from doing the vaccine, or people who've done the vaccine and they're suffering. And thank you, Sally, for your courage to speak out.
Yes. Thank you. Indeed. You're 80, you told me.
Yeah.
I mean, 80 can be the new 60 these days. It sounds like you're doing movies. I mean, you've basically been healthy.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, thank you for sharing that. That was my guess. It was a risky guess, but I figured just sensing that you seem healthy, you're active, and that makes this story of this vaccine injury even more powerful because your career, your health, your wellness, your vitality has all been compromised by this shot.
Yeah, I have a huge movie coming out in 2022 called Sallywood, which sounds like a documentary, but it's not. But it was written about parts of my life and then fictionalized. And that's going to be huge for my career. Sallywood, wow. Keith Carradine and Eric Roberts and Jennifer Tilly and Maria Conchita Alonso and Michael Lerner all supporting me in the lead role.
That is wonderful. Are you done shooting the movie?
Yeah. Yeah. It's being edited now.
Oh, perfect. Well, I sure look forward to that. And I'd like you to have an opportunity just to share your heart to the world. What would you like to tell them about the COVID-19 shots?
Well, it makes me cry. It's been an awful 7 months for me. If you can keep your immune system strong, mega vitamin C and D and all the vitamins and exercise and get oxygen. I'm a former yoga teacher, so breath of fire. And just avoid for as long as you possibly can getting this shot. I would advise that. I have nothing good to say about it. And one friend of mine's niece died from it, you know, so what are you going to do? I guess there's a protest going on today downtown LA against the mandate. I'm glad to see that in the news. I mean, if you want my personal opinion, don't do it.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what I was wanting. You've been through this. You have wisdom of years. You have wisdom of having had a very healthy lifestyle and a healthy life and body and in mind and spirit too, I'm sure. And this is not something that we should be running into doing while it's still so experimental and the dangers are becoming more and more evident. So thank you.
Didn't they say, Paul, 2023, they would know something, and it's now 2021. I mean, why the rush?
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely agree. God bless you. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your heart. And I love you. And I know the world loves you too.
Thank you, Paul, for having me.
God bless.
God bless.
Dr. Paul here. Doctorsandscience.com is where you go to get access to my exclusive members-only section. This is how you, the viewers, support our work. We have no sponsors. We are fully supported by you, our viewers. What do you get in the members section? It's quite a list. You get access to a couple of my ebooks. The first one is the authoritative reference list for my Vaccine Friendly Plan book. I also have written a book, very extensive, called Everyday Health, that covers pretty much what I think you should be doing if you want to live a healthy life in this world today. But there's so much more. We have a live Q&A every week after the show with yours truly, Dr. Paul, answering your questions. Submit your questions online and I will tackle as many of them as I possibly can and try to answer to the best of my ability whatever burning questions you have. In addition to this, you get transcripts of every show. We have other bonus content. And I think one of the huge bonus content pieces is the PowerPoints of the talks I'm giving as I travel around the country. People are always asking me, how can we get those PowerPoints? This is how you do it. Head on over to doctorsandscience.com and become a member and join the team of Against the Wind. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com. Sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.